Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the Treasure Island Sportsbook, it's In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
I want to thank you very much for making my day in the sun so memorable.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Friday. We are live at the Treasure Island Hotel, the Golden Circle Sportsbook. I see Cowboys. I see Utah football fans. I see Oregon football fans. You know that the big Pac-12 championship game is going on right down the street from us over at Allegiant Stadium. Kickoff is just after 5 o'clock. There's a big rodeo in town, so there's some Cowboys here, but they're all here. A bunch of them, anyway, are here at the Golden Circle Sportsbook watching all the sports that we have on the televisions. Look like Boston College basketball, a little ACC tilt going on one of the TVs. We got horse racing, the whole nine yards. It's a sportsbook, and you get to have a lot of fun, great food, great drinks. And we are here for the next 2 hours to break down the Raiders' home game against the Washington football team on Sunday, kickoff 1:05 p.m. at Allegiant Stadium, a huge game for the Raiders. They're all huge from this point forward. I'm not going to sit here and say every one of them, these last six games, is a must win, but it wouldn't be bad. It wouldn't hurt the Raiders a little bit if that's exactly how they approached every single game the rest of the season, almost as a six-game playoff. They want to go to the playoffs. They want to break that ceiling and get to the postseason for the first time since 2016. Only the second time since 2002. To do that, they've got to navigate successfully these next six games, and that starts on Sunday over at Allegiant Stadium. But it's looking doubtful that their best player, arguably, Darren Waller, is going to be on the field, although there's still a little bit of hope. We spoke to Rich Bisaccia, the Raiders' interim head coach, today at the practice facility in Henderson. Here is Coach Bisaccia giving us an update on some of the injuries.
Good afternoon. Good, I'm doing good. Okay, let's just injury report for you guys. Waller still at this time is doubtful. We'll see how tomorrow looks. Patrick will be out. Nassib will be out. And then D-Jack, Kwiatkowski, Nixon, and Josh will kind of make a final decision tomorrow. They ran around out there today a little bit through most of the practice. So we'll make a final decision how it looks tomorrow. And
so Carl Nassib out. The Raiders reserve defensive end, who's having a nice season, a nice, really a bounce back season from what happened last year. DeSean Jackson, who returned to practice today after missing yesterday with a little bit of a calf, was out there. It looks like the Raiders will take that to tomorrow before making a final determination, maybe even, to the game. I get the feeling that DeSean will play, but, you know, anything could happen, and he could wake up tomorrow, and it's aching, and he just doesn't want to, take that chance. So we'll see. Darren Waller, doubtful. Kind of sounds dubious that he's going to play. I think you almost have to figure on him not playing. We got a chance to talk to his backup, Foster Moreau, today over at the practice facility in Henderson, and I know he's fired up about, getting his opportunity to fill some pretty big shoes. He's done it before. Remember, Darren Waller didn't play against the Philadelphia Eagles earlier this year, and that was arguably one of the Raiders' better performances of the season. It was that two-game winning streak right after they beat the Denver Broncos, and Foster, held him, did fine, did well. The Raiders didn't miss a beat, and obviously it's a tough loss if Darren Waller can't play. But I think the more important thing is for Darren Waller to be healthy for the balance of the season. It's a home game against a Washington football team that, frankly, in spite of the three-game losing streak that they're arriving in Las Vegas with. I just think that the Raiders are the better team here. I think that with where the Washington football team is defensively, they're missing some key players. They're not the most explosive offense, although they present some challenges because they're a big, strong football team. Their recipe for winning right now is to ball control, control the clock, run it. Take a few chances downfield with their young quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, put it in the hands of a defense that's been able to kind of hang in there. It's your typical Ron Rivera coached football team and Jack Del Rio defensively coached football team. And it's worked. They've won three straight games, and good for them. Good for Ron Rivera for trying to get this thing pointed in the right direction. But from a talent perspective, I just think the Raiders are better. And I just think that the Raiders' offense, if you're going off what happened against the Dallas Cowboys on Thursday, reclaimed some of what they had lost during the three-game losing streak. The explosive plays were back in the picture. DeSean Jackson kind of went off with three catches for 102 yards. You had Hunter Renfrow going off for 134 yards receiving. The running game got rolling with 143 yards on the ground, which is a huge improvement and a huge difference compared to what it had been doing at various times this year. So I think this offense, the explosiveness is back with this Raiders offense. And I don't think, frankly, when you look at Washington, they play the Seattle Seahawks on Monday night. It was a win, but I look at that Seahawks team, and there's something wrong with that team, whether it's defensively, which I think they've taken a big step backwards. Plus, Russell Wilson, I don't know if he's still dealing with the hand injury or the finger injury or what the case might be, but the accuracy wasn't there. The offense looked like it was stuck in first gear the entire time. So that offense from Seattle and what you saw from the Seahawks against Washington in no way, shape, or form looks like what the Raiders are capable of doing, even without Darren Waller. And they played the second half on Thursday against the Dallas Cowboys without Waller, and they really didn't miss much of a beat. That's not to say that they don't need him. Obviously, they do, and I think that's the key for them is to kind of get him through this stage of this injury to put him in a really good place to be available to them for the rest of the season. The last thing you'd want to do at this point is bring him back a little bit too early and then lose him for more games than just maybe the one game that he's going to miss here against the Washington football team. And let's not forget who comes up next at Allegiant Stadium a week from Sunday. It's there in Kansas City. I should get that straight because I have to get on an airplane at some point and head to Kansas City. But next week, that's who's waiting for the Raiders or the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium. So not overlooking the Washington football team by any stretch of the imagination. If Darren Waller could play and was, either 100% or close to 100%, he'd be out there. But I think that this buys them a little bit more time for him to get back to where he really needs to be, like I said, in order to make sure or ensure or help the cause in terms of him being here and available for the last five games of the season. And when you look at those five games, and we've talked about this a lot, just think of who the Raiders have to play. Every single team on their schedule from next week on is a team that they're dealing with in their division, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Los Angeles Chargers to end the season, the Denver Broncos the day after Christmas, or that they're dealing with in terms of the wild card. You could put the Denver Broncos in there. You could put the Los Angeles Chargers in there. Those are two teams that are in that wild card hunt from the AFC West, but also the Cleveland Browns and the Indianapolis Colts. Those are two teams that the Raiders probably have to be aware of in the wild card chase. That's not to say that the Raiders are just, throwing up the white towel as far as the division race. You think about it, if they win on Sunday against Washington and go to Kansas City and return the favor to the Chiefs, the Raiders would be in first place in their division. That's a long ways off. But you have to me, take a look at all the options. And they're all realistic when you think about it, because there isn't as good as formidable as that schedule is down the stretch. And Every single team that we mentioned from here on out is in playoff contention, including, frankly, Washington. They're still alive in the NFC for a wild card and maybe even their division, depending on what happens with the Cowboys. But every team that they play, especially those AFC teams, represent a team that could be headed to the playoffs or has legitimate playoff aspirations. So these are good football teams that they're getting ready to play. But nevertheless, I look at the Raiders at their best moments this year, and there's been enough best moments, good moments, to say that, hey, this team, when it's going right, can compete with anybody in the NFL. And we've reiterated this, you know, more than a few times. That hasn't always been the case. You know, we talked to Lincoln Kennedy earlier this week, and what did he say? Well, the reason why he thinks this is different, why he thinks that this is a better team, and why he thinks that this team is in a better position to deal with these last six games than they have been in years past, when this is the time of the season where they slip on that banana peel and kind of fall back on their back, and that's that. It's because they have a defense now. You know, I know the numbers can look a little bit, you know, they've given up, what, the third most points in the NFL. But some of that is deceiving. The offense has given them short fields. The offense has thrown a couple of pick sixes. The offense in during the three-game losing streak, when they were kind of making the adjustment, missing Henry Ruggs, that offense at that point was not being efficient. They weren't getting a lot of first downs. They weren't converting third downs into first downs. And they essentially, as a result, kept overexposing the defense. The defense was on the field way too much, especially against the Kansas City Chiefs and especially against the Cincinnati Bengals. They were on the field entirely too much. And close games that the Raiders' defense was hanging in there on became blowouts in the fourth quarter because they were dead tired by the time the fourth quarter came rolling around. So we always talk about this, how important complementary football is. And when you talk about that, you know, you're not just talking about, you know, the run game versus the pass game and, you know, the pass rush complementing the back end on the secondary and coverage. You're also talking about the offense taking some of the pressure off of the defense and vice versa. How do you get the ball back into the hands of Derek Carr and the offense? You make stops on third downs. And you do that, you're helping yourself, number one, because you get to go back over to the sideline and take a rest. And then you put it in the hands of the offense to give them more opportunities to score. And when the Raiders have done that and the offense is doing its thing at a fairly high level, it's just it complements everything and it balances everything out. And then all of a sudden this Raiders defense is way more fresh than they would be if you weren't. That helps the pass rush because all of a sudden when you really need guys to make plays off of the edge, Max Crosby, Yannick Ngakoue, they're just in a better physical conditioning position to make those plays. You know, when you're dead tired and when you've been out there playing way too many snaps, you're going to feel that in the key moments, especially in late in, you know, middle of the fourth quarter, late in games, where you absolutely have to have it. And if you keep going to that well, pretty soon that well is going to run dry. And that's kind of what happened a couple of those games, the Bengals and Chiefs in particular. So when you start looking at this defense now and take that out of the equation, when this offense is functioning well, this defense plays much better. And the reason I say all that is because that wasn't always the case the last couple of years. Even when the offense was playing great, and there were moments last year where this offense was lights out, it didn't matter. Because whether the defense was fresh, whether the defense you know, was dead tired, it didn't matter. They were continually giving up points, continually giving up first downs, continually coughing up leads in games and all of that. I just feel like this year there's much, much less of that and fewer times where this defense has been a liability. And so when you look at these last six games of the season, you can make an argument that the Raiders are as well positioned as they have been in a long time to close this deal because there's a balanced roster that complements each other. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Silver Fury is on the line. How you doing, Silver Fury? Sorry about that, man.
It's okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. How's it going?
Good. It's going good. Hope life is treating you well.
Absolutely.
I just had just 2 points. One, regarding what you said, just the point you're making regarding the offense and the struggles they had in Ruggs. You know, the observation I had with Ruggs leaving, it wasn't so much that three-game losing streak. I thought that was, you know, because we didn't have Ruggs, it was more of just how much of the identity he carried with him, with the with just our over-the-top, you know, tactics and what we like to do with them just in general. You took him out of the equation. We didn't have that anymore. And the defense has changed completely on how they approached us. And I think they spent the three games trying to figure out how we're going to get back, what's our new identity going to be, you know. And then D-Jax comes in, and the Dallas game kind of showed it. We went right back to it. Over the top, speed kills, and everything opened up again. So it was, you know, I think Olsen was just trying to find how are we going to create this new identity. Carr's going through the same thing, and I think that Dallas game kind of validated that. And you know, if you can comment on that when I'm done, that'd be great. And then just my keys to the game, I think at this point, when Carr's aggressive, we win. I mean, if you look at the game, look at our record this year. When he's aggressive, when he's pushing the ball, even he's throwing in a double coverage, single coverage, but when he's pushing the ball down the field, we win. We score points, we win. He might throw a pick, but we win. But when he's tentative, and you know we're dumping it off short, we're not throwing to the sticks, and it, you know we're not putting up any points, we lose. And I think the key to this game, as long as we just push the ball down the field, I know they're going to bring it on defense, but we got to push the ball down the field. We got to force the issue on them.
I completely agree.
That's all I got. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Vinny.
No, it's. I mean, what you just said. I've got both hands raised up right now because I'm in complete agreement. When this offense is aggressive, when it's taking chances downfield and completing chances downfield, that's when this offense is at its best. That was the whole point. We talked about this yesterday in the drafting of Henry Ruggs. That piece of that puzzle, along with Darren Waller, along with Hunter Renfrow, along with Josh Jacobs in the running game, and you know Bryan Edwards drafting him a little bit later in that draft, it was all part of a puzzle. And it was working. It was working exactly the way the Raiders had envisioned, and it was only going to get better from that point on. All right, we know what happened. Henry Ruggs isn't on the team anymore. And that was a huge loss for them. And it just, you can't, I mean, I get it. They need to stay aggressive, and they have to. But there's another end to that as well, and they have to have the kind of pieces that you need in order to remain aggressive. And I think there was a little bit of a lull as DeSean Jackson was getting acclimated. If you remember, he wasn't playing a whole lot of snaps those first couple of games. That jumped to 41 last week against the Dallas Cowboys, and it changed everything because him being on the field more, the comfort level that he's created now with Derek Carr, now all of a sudden Derek Carr feels good about taking those chances downfield. And I don't expect that to deviate. And that's why it's important for DeSean to be out there on Sunday. I know he's dealing with a calf injury. We'll see. I think he's going to play, but you never know. But I think it's important and critical that he's on the field. You know, it doesn't have to be 40 plays a game moving forward, but he's got to be there and he's got to be involved because, as Silver Fury said, that's when the Raiders are at their best, when they're being aggressive and taking chances downfield and stretching the field. And then that opens up everything for the rest of their offense, and all of a sudden that offense becomes much more efficient. We're going to go back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Mark in the Bay Area is on the line. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Benny. How you doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Hey, this is every game gets bigger as the season goes on. This is the biggest game of the year. There is no way we can lose to this team because I'm with you. I really feel like we are the superior team. But I really think it's going to come down to a battle of will. And, you know, they say blocking and tackling, blocking and tackling. This team, they hang their hat on running the football, especially the last three games. You know, they'll try some play action. The kid does scare me a little bit when he can get outside the pocket. But I really think our front seven is playing much better, especially in that Dallas game. I thought Hankins flashed pretty well, Solomon Thomas. So this front seven really has to have the same type of game and shut down that running game. And if we can jump on these guys early, I'm thinking even if we win the toss, let's take the ball and let's go put seven right away. You know, get them down 10, maybe 14 points, and take away that running game. But really it's going to be, to me, Vinny, it's going to be a battle of will of 60 minutes, one play at a time for as long as it takes, because these guys will try to keep running and running unless we can, unless we can get a big lead on them. Offensively, if we can't get the run game going, let's get Kenyon Drake going a little bit on those short passes like Bill Walsh used to do with the Niners. You know what I mean? Like, those are just as good as running plays. And I could see Del Rio coming with the blitz a little bit. So I hope we've got some screens set up to Jacobs or, to Drake. And anyways, those are just some of my thoughts. Want to kind of get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, great call, Mark, and I appreciate it. And you're right. I think that taking away the run game from the Washington football team is critical. And sometimes, like you said, how you do that is you get up big early on and you just take that out of the whole equation. But beyond that, and I do like how the Raiders played the run on Thursday against the Dallas Cowboys, it was a marked improvement and difference compared to the way they played it against the Cincinnati Bengals. And you're right, that front four of the Raiders, and really the front seven, because you're talking about the four down linemen and the three linebackers, sometimes two linebackers based on the package, but both have to be playing well. And I thought that the Raiders linebackers Jonathan Abram and Nate Hobbs in the at slot cornerback, I felt like the run fits on that side of things was a lot better against the Dallas Cowboys. And that's where the Raiders have kind of gotten hurt sometimes in the run game. It's not just the fault of the defensive line. Sometimes they're doing their job, but if a linebacker, if a safety, if the slot cornerback isn't where they need to be in terms of their gap assignments, filling holes, then that's where the Raiders get gashed. So that's a complimentary part of the Raiders defense too, but I'm completely with you. I think the Raiders need to lock that down, shut that down, and make sure that the run game is negated, because really, that's how Washington has been able to be successful these last few weeks. And then you take some chances with Heinicke downfield and in the pass game, but it sure helps him when that running game is functioning. It's something that the Raiders have to make a priority to slow down and stop on Sunday at Allegiant Stadium. One more call before we take a break. H is in Albuquerque. How you doing, H?
Hey, Vinny, nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
Hey, I've been an unwavering supporter of Derek Carr from the very beginning. And one thing I saw in the game that was really encouraging to me, because, yeah, I think he's a quarterback that makes all the throws, but the one criticism I have I've had is his pocket awareness and his moving around in the pocket. But this game, I can't recall seeing a game where he's played better moving in the pocket. And there was one play that really stood out to me, although he made several great ones, late in the game when he pump faked twice to the flat and then threw deep to Hunter, and wide open Hunter Renfro, and it really seemed like they'd been working on it, because I just saw a marked improvement in his ability in moving around in that pocket. And his line protection has been up and down his whole career. He's seen the best and the worst of it. And it was something to me that I felt like he really needed to work on. So I'm hoping that is indicative of his future play, because when he moved around like that, unstoppable. He's the engine that makes it go, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, H, I completely agree with you. He was decisive in the pocket on Thursday, and when the not just in terms of decision making, but techniques, his footwork, the way he was holding the ball and clutching with two hands, the confidence that he showed in the offensive line. I think Lincoln brought that up earlier this week. Sometimes you have to have faith, more faith that the offensive line is doing their job, because when you don't, sometimes you're going to react to something that's not happening and react a little bit badly to what's not happening. So I thought, I'm with you, H. He was really strong in the pocket, and even when he moved around a little bit in the pocket, he was really decisive with the footwork, really decisive with his decision making, and it showed. And if that can carry over, that really helps this offense without question. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We're live at the Treasure Island Hotel at the Golden Circle Sportsbook. It's a Friday night in Las Vegas. You got Cowboys, you've got University of Utah football fans and Oregon football fans getting ready to make their way over to Allegiant Stadium to watch the big Pac-12 championship game. And when we come back, a good friend of mine, Heath Schneider, is going to be joining us. He is in charge of Sextros. Remember, we've been talking about that pretty much every day here at Raider Nation Radio. And the recipe that his grandmother came up with back in Templeton, Iowa, and how it caught the eye of a lot of people during Prohibition, and now it's available to you now. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Monsieur. Talk to you after the break.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now, back to your host, Vinny Bonsignor.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Friday. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We are live here at the Treasure Island Hotel, the Golden Circle Sportsbook. Plenty of televisions, great food, great drinks. A lot of people getting ready to have go enjoy their Friday night, whether it's over at Allegiant Stadium where it's the Pac-12 championship football game tonight between Utah and Oregon. There's a big rodeo in town. So, as usual, a lot going on in Las Vegas. But before I get to that, I want to tell you guys a little bit about my new friends over at Sextros, and they're putting a contemporary spin on an American classic. You know, during Prohibition, the little town of Templeton, Iowa became one of the liquor capitals of the world. And a pioneering mother, driven by the need to feed her family, crafted a farmhouse brew that ended up becoming an iconic piece of an American history. Through word of mouth, Loreen Sextro's distinctive creation spread from St. Paul to St. Louis and Omaha to Chicago, where Al Capone referred to it as the gold standard. That recipe has survived decades of copycats and imitations. Meanwhile, Mama Sextro's secret concoction was passed on from generation to generation, and now, nearly 100 years later, her grandson Heath has brought it back to life. And what was once only enjoyed by Big Al and his connected associates is now available to you. I've personally tried it, and it's exceptional. It's fresh, it's clean, and it's a superior spirit for any cocktail. Visit Sextros.com, that's Sextros.com, for all their products and recipes and where you can find it locally. Go get connected over at Sextros.com, Sextros.com. And by the way, it is my pleasure to welcome in that grandson, Heath Schneider. He is the CEO over at Sextros. Heath, welcome aboard. I really appreciate you spending some time with us. I listen to this story. I read it every day. And the history of it all and the intrigue of it all, where your grandmother, out of need during the Prohibition, I'm sure it was also the Great Depression probably was going on.
Correct.
Yes. As well. So people had to do what they had to do to make a living, put food on the table, all of that. And she was ingenious in what she came up with. And the fact that word spread from there and then all of a sudden Templeton, Iowa, where it was all, you know, being done, became like this liquor capital of the world. Why don't you explain a little bit about that whole story and how it survived right up until now, where you're kind of bringing it back to life?
Well, thank you, Vinny. You do the explanation so well.
You
really
you.
Do. Thank you for that. Just a little town in Templeton, Iowa, 350 people in 1930, 350 people today. So just small town America. Everybody knows everybody, and at that time, that town was going through a tough set of decisions in that you weren't selling crops, cattle, pigs, chickens. No one could really find that in their budget, but they sure as heck could afford good quality liquor.
Right, exactly.
So my grandmother was always a crafty type of person, crafty with pies, crafty with bacon and eggs, crafty with gardening. And, you know, the thing to make at that time was liquor.
Right.
Especially if you could make good liquor.
Right.
And she just used her decades of experience with yeast and came up with a liquor recipe that ended up being world famous at that time, if you were lucky enough to get it.
Right.
And, I mean, people would travel 300 miles on dirt, two-track dirt roads. You know, they didn't have interstates back then, or throw barrels on rail cars and ship it, you know, as you've described, St. Paul, St. Louis, Omaha, Chicago. That just happens to be where the Burlington Railroad would run back then.
Right.
So that railroad runs right through little old Templeton, Iowa. So they became, by way of location and quality, a world-class spirit that was known as the gold standard in the 30s.
Right. And I know this was a long time ago, and I know that you're a history buff. We've talked about that, and so obviously this is a passion of yours, and it runs from generation to generation in your family. But how did word spread back then so that other people were aware of it miles and miles away?
Just word of mouth.
Jeez.
It really just word of mouth. You know, one person tells another person, another person tells. The next thing you know, people are driving from the city to this town trying to find where they can find this. And, you know, I mean, you know, word of mouth went a long way in the 30s.
Right.
You know, you hear each other's phone conversations because one line would service 20 houses.
Right.
And it's so hard to explain those things to people in this age because it's so different today versus what they were doing and what they had to go through at that time to do what they did, which is one of the things I respect so much about what my grandmother did. I mean, we're talking about chips down.
Right.
You know, up against it, kids to feed, nothing to sell, and out of the blue, she learns how to make a whiskey
right
out of rye that becomes world famous. And she's just one of the 10 families that did that
right
at that time.
Right.
She's the only one that I know of that didn't get caught.
Yeah, that was the key to the thing, to it all, yeah, too, right?
That helped. They got the wrong farm. She wasn't so much smart as lucky.
Like, okay, her, like that, her, that counts sometimes, too.
Like her grandson.
Right.
And then on top of that, she just had a care for quality and had a craft for yeast and just got into this network of an entire community. The
right
whole town of Templeton, Iowa was in on this.
Right.
The sheriff, the mayor would turn the water on at midnight. You know, they'd raid from another county because this county wouldn't convict.
I love it.
You know, that's the spirit of what she did and what
right
she made. And I'm so excited to share it because no one makes liquor like this in the world.
Right.
We're making it like they made it in a barn in 1932 in a field
right
in the middle of nowhere in 1932, which, in my opinion, is so much better in taste. And I've come up with a new little pitch phrase. I hope you don't mind me trying it on you, but I call
all
it
right
great taste, less illing.
Oh, there you go. All right. I like that.
Because it does. It does just taste great. It,
right.
It actually feels, and I try not to get into feel with alcohol.
Right, right.
But we all know some liquors we've had where the next morning it's like, oh my God,
yes, yes,
what hit me?
I'll raise my hand to that.
Okay, well,
it's happened.
I'm on the polar opposite of that because
right
we use no chemicals,
right,
no malting, purely organic,
right,
and 4 gallons at a time.
Wow. As opposed to
10,000
yes
gallons at a time.
All right, so that tells you, it gives you a little idea of the care.
Right.
And not overdoing it for the sake of you know what and
yeah
doing it correctly.
Yeah,
right,
just speeding the process and hurrying through it and just getting to yield as fast as you can.
Right.
We've got a master distiller named Whiskey Rich, who's
okay
a fifth generation bootlegger.
I love
on
I
the
like
team
that. Right.
And he's got two apprentices. I'd like to shout it out to him.
Go for it.
Max and Alec.
Hello, Max and Alec.
Yep. They're the next generation. They've actually picked up this craft. They've been taught by Whiskey Rich. Do a fantastic job of making exactly what my grandma made in 1932.
Tell us about the recipe, because this is like some sacred holy grail almost that's
yeah
been in your family for a long time.
Correct.
And, you know, when we talk about these type of things, yes, it's secretive. It has to be, because that's the key to the whole thing.
Right.
First of all, when did you become aware of what your grandmother was doing?
Yeah.
If you didn't know all along, and B, when did you get your hands on that recipe?
So I knew late in her life that she had bootlegged. She was very secretive about it. Even when she'd tell me, she'd look over her right shoulder or left shoulder and go, "Hey, I used to make whiskey."
You did know? You believe it?
I mean, well, yeah, because the town of Templeton was infamous.
Okay.
I mean, Templeton itself, the story's been told, for the record. You
right
know, I don't want to get into all that weed.
Yeah.
But the story's been told. We just happen to have the original recipe for that story
right
versus somebody says, "Hey, that's a great story. Let's go buy some whiskey up in Indiana and tell that story." It's a
got
great
it
idea.
Got
so,
it. Got it.
So we actually,
you got the real deal.
Correct. Yeah. And our recipe is painfully simple. It's water, sugar, rye, and yeast.
Okay.
So it's that. That's it.
Right.
You know, what's unique to what we do is how we use water, sugar, rye, and
right.
yeast, how we make them work together, how we get to a liquor product. And that's the piece that I bring to today.
Right.
Is some version of water, sugar, rye, and yeast that turned into an exceptional liquor product.
Right.
And fortunately, you've had it.
I've had it. It is really good, and it's really smooth, and you don't – it the smoothness of it and the ease that it goes down, it's not like a normal – when I've had whiskey before or, you know, it kind of gives you that little jolt a little bit, like, you know, this doesn't. And I'm not just saying that because you're sitting here right now. That's the truth of the matter. By the way, we're talking to Heath Schneider. He is the CEO of Sextros. He's done a wonderful thing to breathe life into his grandmother's passion. She did it out of necessity. I think you're doing it out of honor, and then to also you know, make it available to all of us, which is a great thing. And if you can talk about that process and where you guys are and some of the newer products that you guys are unveiling lately.
Yeah, so I just got to make one correction.
Go ahead.
I'm the bootlegger's grandson.
Okay, that's right. What did I say?
The CEO.
Okay.
I'm not the CEO. That's a misprint.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
But I always try to clarify that because I prefer bootlegger's grandson.
I like
to be
that too. I like that
Plus,
too.
Plus, it's a little more honest with who I really am and
right.
what I really do. I'm a promoter of the product. I'm
right.
a huge fan, obviously. And
right.
my passion in life is to bring my grandmother's recipe to the world.
Right, got it.
So, putting that into context, we've got some fantastic products coming out
right.
that are going to be really fun in that we're creating a clear spirit, meaning it hasn't been in a barrel,
okay.
that we think will be the ultimate base for any cocktail.
Right.
Meaning that you could replace gin, tequila, vodka, rum,
right.
any clear spirit with this spirit.
Got it.
And it will make your cocktail smoother, cleaner, tastier, almost barely noticeable with the alcohol content.
Got it.
It's
okay.
very soft and sweet and smooth. So we're bringing that product out really soon. And then in addition to that, we have our aged product, which aged product represents the time, the place, you know, it's literally a piece of American history.
Yes, it is.
And that's going to be in the same bottle, but obviously it'll have a dark color to it. It'll be aged in oak barrels from Minnesota for anywhere from 18 to 64 months.
Right.
And it will be distilled to a proof of anywhere from 150 down to 115.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
So, you know, that's our newest rendition.
Right.
And we're really excited about it because it's going to take our five-bottle lineup and drop it down to two.
Right.
With a really special high proof as a accessory piece.
Got it, got it. All right, so we have a lot of listeners here in Las Vegas. We have a lot of listeners all over the country. If you can let them know, our listeners, hey, where can they go get it, whether it's going into a store, whether it's going online, how can they go buy some Sextros?
So we're offered on the shelves in states like Missouri and Nebraska. We're offered under a second brand known as Iowa Legendary Rye
okay.
in Iowa.
Right.
You can go online, sextros.com.
Got it.
I think that's the best place to get our product right now.
Right.
It's the best price. We're working on doing some free shipping here soon.
Okay. All right.
You know, you buy a couple bottles, that way you get one for Vinny, one for your friends, one for your family.
Like the sound of that.
Yeah. So that's coming out soon. But the website's really easy, as you've described. It's sextros.com.
Right.
And you can order a bottle of the clear. You can order a bottle of the aged. I can tell you this. You've never had anything like this. I guarantee, even if you've had every liquor on the planet, because we make this unlike anybody else in our proprietary stills that
right.
we also make.
Right.
You've never had anything like this, and it will be special.
Without giving away the whole secret, can you shed any light on why it's different in terms of the process of making it?
It's a great question. So, three things. Number one, we do not use chemicals.
Okay.
We don't use enzymes.
Right.
That's very hard to do because most people use enzymes to break down grain quickly so that they can get the starches out, let the yeast eat the sugar, which creates alcohol.
Okay.
There's your lesson in how to
make liquor. I like it. Okay.
Okay. So we actually instead long soak our rye. We take our rye and we soak it for weeks.
Okay.
and then we just let it sit there and plump up and get to a point where Whiskey Rich says it's ready. It's got a scent, it's got a look, it's got a taste. It's at that point in time that we add our sugar. We let that sit for another couple weeks, and then it's at that point in time that it's our original recipe. But we also don't use malted barley,
okay,
which is another version of a chemical. Malted barley has an enzyme in it,
okay,
that creates a quick breakdown.
Right.
So the difference between us and everybody else is we're taking our time with it.
Yep.
You know, we're doing it really small. We're letting nature take its course. And by doing that, you know, keeping the chemicals out, keeping the malting out, keeping all of the hurry out and making it in small batches, it tastes and feels like nothing else.
And I can definitely attest to that. And we're talking to the bootlegger's grandson,
thank you, sir,
Heath Schneider. It's a great product. I'm glad you were able to spend some time with us to shed some light on it. I've been talking about it every day on air. I wanted to get your voice and put a name and a face and a voice to what we've been talking about, and also to let everybody know where to go get it. And really, I think it's the story behind all of this, on top of the fact that this is a great product, the story behind it just makes it so much more compelling. And we're proud to be a part of it with you. So good luck to you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Like Heath said, sextros.com. That's sextros.com. It's the perfect gift for the holidays. It's the perfect gift or product to spice up one of your parties, whether it's a holiday party, New Year's, Christmas. You know what I'm getting at. So the perfect time to go to sextros.com to go ahead and pick up some great product. Thank you, Heath, for spending some time with us. Really
thank
appreciate
you, Vinny.
It.
I appreciate you very much.
You
thank
got
you.
It. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Friday.
Welcome back to In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, live from the Treasure Island Sportsbook.
Our thanks to Heath Schneider, the bootlegger's grandson, for stopping by and talking about Sextros. I'm sitting here looking at a brand new bottle right now. It's not even out for the public just yet, so I'm looking forward to an old-fashioned, right? An old-fashioned. I'm going to make an old-fashioned sometime this weekend, maybe after the Raider game on Sunday. And we'll see what happens on Sunday. You know, six games left. Q Myers, our great colleague and host of Unnecessary Roughness, you know, likes to talk about it, and I agree with them. Until it's a must-win, you don't call it a must-win because the Raiders can not win this game against the Washington, still survive, and still reach their goals. So it's not a must-win in the classic sense of a must-win. Their season's not going to finish or be over if they lose on Sunday. They're not going to be out of the playoffs if they lose on Sunday. But it's as close to a must-win as possible, and they really all are. At this point, you know, the Raiders slipped up a couple of times this year. You know, the loss to the New York Giants and the loss to the Chicago Bears being the most glaring missteps, in my estimation. I think the Cincinnati Bengals, they just didn't play well in that game. They didn't play well against the Giants. If you remember what was kind of hanging over their head in the Chicago Bears game, what had happened 48 hours before that. Not to make excuses, but you know, when you're in my job as somebody who covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review Journal, somebody that talks about them every day on the air, you have to take a look at everything, and you can't just dismiss anything because you don't want to go down that road of excuses. Look, there's sometimes valid explanations, and everything kind of plays into it. And the Raiders have been dealing with a lot of stuff this year. A lot of, you know, interruption and disruption in terms of focus and, you know, having to just play through a lot of stuff that they don't have much control over but does affect them. And in particular, in that Chicago Bears game, they just didn't look like they were anywhere near being the Raiders team that we had seen, you know, prior to that game. A lot of penalties, a lot of drop balls, shooting themselves in the foot, and so the long and short of it is that loss, the Giants loss, and to some extent the Bengals loss as well, where I also felt like they just weren't there 100%. Not accusing them of a lack of effort by any stretch of the imagination, but their focus seemed to be a little bit off, and that displayed itself in some silly mistakes and some careless penalties that really did hurt them. But because of those losses, you know, they've put themselves in a position where there's not a lot of leeway. There's not a lot of cushion here. You know, you like to get to a point in this time of season where you do have a little bit of leeway and you can slip up maybe or have a bad day, and it's not going to be as critical as having a bad day will be now. They're 6-5. There's six games left in the season, starting on Sunday at Allegiant Stadium against the Washington football team. There's not much margin for error. And maybe that's a good thing at this point. You know, maybe that's you know, nothing gets somebody's attention more than it's basically win or else time of the year, right? And so that's going to heighten everything, the senses, the focus, the discipline, you would think. And I think I'm going to say this, too. I think the Raiders have been through so much this year that to me, it's sharpened them a little bit. Like, this is – I've been doing this for a long time. A lot of what's happened this year is just unprecedented. You don't expect some of the things that's happened to them to happen. You can't account for it. You can't prepare for it. You can't practice it. There's no book to go by. There's no blueprint to follow. You just have to roll with it as best as possible. And I think the Raiders have done a pretty decent job of that. Yeah, there's been some games that they would look back on right now and kind of regret how they played and you know, the carelessness in some passages that they played with. But they can't do anything about it other than learn from it and other than try to be better for that and make sure it doesn't happen again. And I think between those experiences of when you shoot yourself in the foot, there's a steep price to pay, and it usually is paid by a loss rather than a win. That experience coupled with the understanding that they have of when they do play well, they can beat anybody. And I go back to the season opener against the Baltimore Ravens. In spite of falling into a 14-0 hole to start that game, the Raiders got their act together and played a hell of a football game to beat the Baltimore Ravens, who right now, record-wise, are the best team in the AFC. And so that, when you can establish that sort of a level for yourself, then you know that it becomes a in your mind, you know that you can get to that level if you do A, B, Z, D, all of those. If you can do all of those things, you can play that well and beat whoever is on, you know, in front of you. So they've established that belief that if they take care of business, they could beat anybody. And I think that plus knowing what can happen when they don't, is going to set themselves up pretty well for these last six games, because they know what they have to do and they know what they have to avoid. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Friday. We're live at the Treasure Island Hotel, the Golden Circle Sportsbook. Come on by. It's a great scene. There's a lot of people here, a lot of televisions, a lot of sports, a lot of food, a lot of drinks. Come enjoy yourself on a Friday night here at Treasure Island. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.